why am I going to pay a tip in a bookstore or something? It's like,
you handed me a plastic water bottle.
Yeah. Like, no, I'm not tipping you, but it's like, you got to push three buttons with the person watching you in order to not pay a tip. Yeah. So sometimes you're just like, all right, I'll click the button and pay the tip. I wonder if they knew this was coming. It's almost like they knew it was coming. They're like, we got to build in the tips for this no tax on tips thing.
Yeah. I hope everyone's prepared for when we hang up our Zoom call and then it pops up and it's not like, how was your audio? It's like, how much do you want to tip your financial planner?
Right. We are accepting tips now. Welcome to Finance for Physicians, the show where we help physicians like you use money as a tool to live a great life. I'm your host, Daniel Rim, and I've spent the last decade advising physicians on their personal finances with the mission to help them understand that taking control of their finances now means creating a future where they can practice medicine where, when, and how long they want to. Jackie, welcome to the podcast for the first time ever.
Hi, Daniel. Thanks for having me. Long-time listener, first-time participant.
Nice. Yeah, I thought that I had you on before, but it's so Jackie's been with us. She's one of our exceptional financial planners for quite a while now, and it's been a long time coming. I'm glad we've made the time to get together, and we're talking about such an exciting topic too. We're going to talk about politics, right?
Yes, everyone's favorite, really.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to get into politics, but we will talk about hot topic definitely now this time of year as we're recording. This is December of 2024. So we're getting in the end of the year. The election has already happened and we have kind of a change in leadership, and there's been all kinds of talk about big time changes one way or the other. And so as a result, you know, it's natural for, I'm sure a lot of you guys listening, a lot of the people we work with, it's natural for people to be having a little bit of uncertainty or a little concern or worry around like, well, what's going to change? Like, are my investments going to tank to nothing, or is inflation, whatever, you know, how's all this? Cause there's a lot of big stuff being thrown around. So we're going to kind of dip our toe into the water in some of the big stuff you've probably heard about, and hopefully some of the things you've been thinking about as far as like how that might impact your situation. So I'm excited.
Yeah. As am I. Let's get into it.
Yeah. I think maybe a good starting point would be to talk about the tax stuff, because it's actually, I wouldn't say straightforward, but probably a little more status quo. Cause so the current tax law that we're operating under right now is the, what was it, 2018 when that was passed, Jackie? I think it was
17, 18, somewhere in that range.
Tax Cut and Job, is it TCJA?
The TCJA.
TCJA, Tax Cuts and Jobs Act.
Yes.
So that was a Trump thing. It was 2017, 2018. And there was actually a huge tax change. They added a lot of really unique things. Like they added this QBI thing for business owners, a huge deal. If you don't know about that and you're a business owner, read about the QBI. We'll definitely cover that in a future show if you want. And then the SALT tax, we'll talk about that in a minute. Yep. This was this cap that they implemented in that new tax law where it basically limited your ability to deduct certain things. That was another thing. And they also kind of played with the tax brackets some, like they lowered them in general. Mm-hmm. And so the unique thing about that tax law is it was set to expire in what,
2026.
It was
going to be sunsetting and returning more back to the previous laws that we'd had before.
Right. Which were on average, for the type of families we work with, worse. Like the average family I work with paid less tax under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act than they were paying before, like generally speaking. But, and I think they did that. Do you know, Jackie, I think they had to have less votes if they did it where it sunset.
I believe so, but we're calling back many years now and I don't feel 100% confident on that exact hurdle per se.
Right. So anyway, the big thing that was kind of on the radar was that thing's about to go away in 2026. And Kamala Harris was definitely like, it's not coming back. You know, like it was, I think she was pretty clear in that she was not going to extend it again. And Trump was very much so like saying he would extend
it,
or make it permanent, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And so now that's suddenly back on the table for this administration.
Right. So it's odds are, I would say that of all the tax things we'll talk about, I think that's probably the most, if I had to bet, the most likely thing to happen is that gets extended or maybe made permanent. I mean, nothing's permanent, but like.
Right. But at the very least, another extension instead of that 2026 sunset that has been currently written and planned for, but that now probably going to be keeping that going forward, as well as some tweaks that have even been discussed from this incoming administration for things that they will potentially change with it from last time.
And there was also another big part of the TCJA tax law that was potentially going to sunset. That was the estate tax threshold or taxable estate threshold. Like that's the amount of net worth you have to have in order to start getting taxed as an estate.
Right.
Like a taxable estate, which is a huge tax. Mm-hmm. And so that number was set to go way down. well, I think it was like 7 million or something.
It's definitely a significant difference from what it was under TCJA.
Right. And whereas now it's what, like, is it 14 million per person?
I believe so.
So yeah. Like a couple is, you know, it's a high number to where it's very much less people are affected by it. So anyway, that's for most people, I think, listening, that's generally good news, is that the tax scheme is probably going to continue on how it has been. But what about all this other stuff? There's been a lot of talk. So what are some of the things? Trump's talked a lot, but what are some of the things we want to talk about? No tax on tips. I think everybody's going to start getting paid tips all of a sudden.
I know. I think I'm actually going to be bringing that to you and asking if I can be compensated as tips instead of salary from now on.
We may start accepting tips. I don't know. It's funny. I was just, you know, how everybody, I guess it was a COVID thing, magically started building in tips into their processing systems. Yeah. Like even for non-services, it's like, why am I going to pay a tip in a bookstore or something? It's like,
you handed me a plastic water bottle.
Yeah. Like, no, I'm not tipping you, but it's like, you got to push 3 buttons with the person watching you in order to not pay a tip. Yeah. So sometimes you're just like, all right, I'll click the button and pay the tip. I wonder if they knew this was coming. It's almost like they knew it was coming. They're like, we got to build in the tips for this no tax on tips thing.
Yeah. I hope everyone's prepared for when we hang up our Zoom call and then it pops up and it's not like, how was your audio? It's like, how much do you want to tip your financial planner?
Right. We are accepting tips now. Yeah. I don't know. That one will be a little harder because that's going to have to, like, I think that'll have to be like a Congress thing. Like, and it would be a new change. And I guess they could add that on to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act deal.
Yeah. I know that's been discussed, but not sure entirely how realistic that is to make that come to fruition for people.
And I don't know how many physicians would be affected by it. One thing I would say is, this is always how it goes almost with tax laws. I would be, as soon as they pass it, there will be like creative ways to like work around it. So people are going to be like, well, how could I start earning tips?
Would you like to tip your surgeon?
Right. You'll see like a sign in the surgery office accepting tips. And we've lowered our pricing too. And you know,
There will, if that does end up coming to fruition, I think there will be some creative ways we see pricing and compensation change in a variety of businesses going forward.
Yeah. Now the other big thing we were going to talk about that I think would affect a lot of you guys, especially if you're on the older end of the spectrum, is the Social Security thing. So
we're doing away with the taxation of Social Security benefits. That could mean a lot, as you mentioned, especially for people who are either a little closer to retirement or already in retirement. That could make a significant difference in what their monthly annual cash flow looks like for them.
Yeah, and it could be pretty substantial if you're in a high tax bracket. So how it works now is, I think it's like a $25,000 threshold or something. It's like when you exceed a certain threshold, they start to tax your Social Security income, but not all of it. Like they kind of like partially tax it. I think it's like to 85% or something along those lines. So basically, if you're in a high income, pretty much all physicians would be set to pay tax on most of their Social Security income. Like generally, that's how it shakes out. And so, you know, if you're getting $4,000 a month, or we'll say $50,000 a year of Social Security income, and you're paying tax on, you know, 30,000 of it, and you're in a high tax, 50% tax bracket, like $30,000, 50% tax bracket, that's a lot of, it's $15,000 of tax potentially swing. So that's a big one. Now, if you're younger, I don't know, we got bigger problems with Social Security.
So that's actually what I was going to bring up is, you know, you said this may have a big impact if we're in retirement or close to it. But some of the projections with the change, that loss of revenue from no longer taxing those benefits, I have it up right now on one of my other screens. It's projected to increase the shortfall here, the 75-year shortfall that they project out for Social Security funding, by 25%. So there are some potential longer term spillover effects for our younger working year type clients.
So in other words, by not taxing it, it's going to make it worse?
Correct. Yeah, because that's no longer then pouring back into what we have available to pay out those benefits. So
I didn't know that they were, I guess I didn't know one way or the other. I was assuming they were not using the Social Security tax to put in the Social Security pool. It would make sense for them to do that. But like knowing the government, I would have thought they just throw it in the other pool of money. And in that case, it doesn't make a big deal. But either way, that's a separate problem. Like the last time I looked at it, it was like Social Security is going to be required to make changes in like 2032 or something like that.
Yeah. So the current insolvency date that they're projecting is 2032 for Social Security and 2030 for Medicare specifically. And with these proposed changes of no longer taxing that income, that is going to be 1 year earlier for Social Security and 6 years earlier for Medicare. But again, that's all based on budgetary projections here. And if we're changing large aspects of tax policy overall, maybe they find some ways to try and plug up those
Yeah, I have no, I wonder how they calculated it for Medicare, because that's like different and different. I guess they probably just prorated it, or I don't know. Anyway, I wouldn't trust government projections either. So that's another factor.
Should we start releasing our own projections?
Yeah, we should start. No, what we should do is we should start reminding people of what the government projections were like 5 years ago to show how terrible they are.
Well, I think that's a big part of some of these election year things, is we don't want anything, any decisions or changes to be driven by fear. So that actually would be very helpful to say, yeah, here's what the projections used to say, and here's what the situation is now. So let's maybe take it all with a grain of salt.
Yeah, they're pretty much always wrong. And no one ever talks about the old projections. They're just like, what's the updated projection? So maybe we should be like, well, how often have they been wrong? And it's like 99% of the time. So projections are meaningless in that case. Yeah, so potentially no tax on Social Security. We'll see how that shakes out. That could be a big deal, but there's a lot of problems with Social Security. I guess the takeaway for that is we always advise our clients just not to even account for Social Security to be safe, especially if you're younger. It's like, let's just pretend like it's not a thing, to be playing it safe, because it's not completely solvent. But
absolutely, we'd rather that everything in the plan works independently of having to rely on that. And then that is a cherry on top if someday that's there in retirement.
Yeah, we don't want to rely on Social Security. Let's take a quick break to talk about our firm, Renda Financial Planning. The goal of our podcast is to empower you to make better financial decisions. But sometimes the best financial decision you can make is to work with someone who understands your financial goals and has the expertise to keep you on track to reach them. That's where Renda Financial Planning comes in. We are a full-service financial planning firm that works with over 400 physicians and their families across the country. We charge a transparent monthly flat fee for our services and offer virtual meetings you can take from anywhere. Best of all, you'll get to work with a team that specializes in working with physician families. So whether you're starting out and wondering how you'll balance your student loan payments and saving for a home, or you're an established physician trying to figure out how to pay for your kid's college and how much you need to save to reach financial freedom, we can help. I'll put a link in the show notes to schedule a no-obligation meeting with one of our certified financial planners. Ren Financial Planning, LLC is a registered investment advisor. For more information about our firm, please visit renfinancial.com. That's W-R-E-N-N-E financial.com. What was the last thing? The last thing was the salt tax thing. That's
Yeah. So we talked a little bit about how right now, I believe that deduction is capped at around $10,000. And that has been subject to discussion really on, I think, both sides of the political spectrum.
Yep.
But that was one thing we were talking about here in particular, because the incoming administration has said that they were going to make a change there.
So this is
something that is on the table.
This is particularly important for those of you listening in like high state income tax and local income tax states, especially with high real estate values. And so California is the obvious, probably top ranking state where it's a big deal. Because so what the salt tax does now is the cap on that tax deduction is $10,000. So if you own, you know, multi-million dollar house with a mortgage and property tax, and you're paying 13% on your state income tax, and you're a physician, you're paying a ton of state when you add up. So there's the salt tax is like the property tax plus the state income tax. The income tax deduction gets capped out at $10,000. So you're probably paying more than $10,000 on your property tax alone. And so when it's capped out, you get no benefit for that other tax above that. So we have plenty of clients that are like paying, you know, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year in, you know, salt tax stuff, and they don't get to deduct any of it.
Right. And previously there was no cap on that. Under the old tax law, if you were paying, you know, as you were just saying, $40,000, $50,000, that was all something that could actually provide a benefit when you're itemizing on your taxes, whereas now that's since been capped. However, even though that got capped during the TCJA by the former Trump administration, it sounds like now there has been some discussion for the incoming administration to do away with that cap. Apparently, it wasn't very popular when people could no longer deduct some of those taxes. So we'll have to see if that is a change that also comes to fruition here.
Right. I'm generally for lowering taxes. And so that I would consider that a good thing. But I'm also for fiscal responsibility. So like, let's lower some expenses too. That's a different conversation, but yep. Okay. So those are the big tax things to be thinking about. We'll keep our eye on it because, you know,
it's going to be a fluid situation. I'm sure.
Correct. It is. Who knows what shakes out. The other thing, probably the most common thing that we've heard from people is concerns about their investments around. Yeah. And I think there was a lot of anxiety prior to the election. It seems like it's on average dies down afterward, but there's still definitely some anxiety. It's like, it depends on which side you were on. It's a lot of times as to, cause you know, say I was, there was this polarizing setup viewpoint mindset. I mean, is what I'm trying to say in this election, to where it was like, the world is going to end if one side, like the talk was like the world is going to end if one side wins on both sides in some cases. And so that kind of fear mindset was happening on both sides of the coin with a lot of people. And that seemed to like trickle over into like their stock market concerns around their investments. And so we wanted to spend some time on that. Is that true? Is the world going to end, Jackie?
Ooh, you know, I'm going to go ahead and throw my prediction to no, the world will not end.
That's a safe prediction.
Unless you want to dispute that, we could take different sides of the bet. But no, I do not think that it's going to be that severe to the point of the world ending. I mean, this is something we go through every 4 years. And I feel like every 4 years, there's kind of this, the fear mongering on both sides.
But this time is different.
But it's different every time, right? Every single time we do this, this is the most important election. That's
correct. It's always the most important.
And ever will happen. And this time it's different somehow. But yet every single time we tend to see that while there may be a little bit of volatility immediately around that election, that isn't necessarily something that becomes sustained throughout an entire administration, and certainly not throughout an administration of one party versus the other. There's not a clear correlation there where we can easily predict what that's going to look like.
Yeah, there's been a lot of research around like the elections and the political landscape and the stock market. And yeah, it's basically a terrible predictor. It's like you can't get anything out of it.
There's really no meaningful data there about what, you know, portfolio returns or volatility or things like that will look like under a Republican administration versus a Democratic administration. No meaningful correlation, no meaningful data that you can really draw conclusions from, and especially that you could draw a conclusion from and project forward and hope that that still holds. There just really isn't anything there that you can build off of.
Yeah. And I think the part about it is that the change that a lot of people worry about, like that takes a really long time and there's a lot of checks and balances and it takes a while to work through the system. And there's the hype factor of the stock market. Like the hype factor would be like, the, you know, everybody gets hyped up in trading stocks and that gets things volatile. And that's going to be like really short-term volatility that you would see. But we're kind of looking at it like from a long-term view. I mean, at a minimum, like year by year, and really more like, what's this thing going to be looking like when you retire? Because that's what's critical, because that's what you're mainly using it for. And so
we want to plan for decades, not for individual years here and there. We want to be playing that long game, really.
Right. And that's why, you know, that's kind of, for example, we're going back to Social Security. It's like, you know, no tax on Social Security is cool and all, but like, let's try to figure out Social Security for when I actually retire.
Yeah. Let's also balance the budget so that Social Security can exist.
Yeah. Let's maybe balance the budget. Let's just try 1 year, like 1 year balance budget. Let's see if we can do that. Cause you cannot indefinitely spend more money than you make.
What do you mean?
It's not there's a point where that breaks the system. So yeah, I think the stock market, I would not have concern over it. I would try to view it from a long-term view. Yeah.
And I think that's often the question that we get from clients or people that we work with around these more volatile election times is, do I need to make a change? Should I be worried? Is this going to change our strategy? And I think our short answer is no to all of those, because we are playing that long game on decades. And presidents historically have very little impact on the economy and the stock market, as much as they may try or as much as they may say that they do. Those are very complex systems that tend to run fairly independently of the political environment. So we generally aren't looking to make any changes to a client's portfolio or to their strategy based on those sort of short-term political changes.
Yeah. And just kind of giving you a little bit of a peek into how we invest too. It's, I think a big part of how we invest is kind of already taking into consideration the fact that there's going to be like ups and downs. It's basically already built in to the equation that we're like expecting uncertainty and ups and downs. And I was telling Jackie at the beginning that we're going to make predictions at the end of this. So that now I'm going to throw out a few of my predictions, but what I was talking about, I didn't explain that to her at the beginning, but what I was talking about is that I think if I had to make a prediction about like what's going to change over the next 4 to 8 years is that I think, you know, maybe one category. So for example, the past 5 to 10 years, tech's done really, really, really well, especially like US tech, especially the big companies, like giant US tech companies have crushed it.
Mega caps have had a spectacular run.
They've had a huge run. And if you look like all the way back to like as far back as you can look historically in the US, the big winners long, long term are small cap companies, like little tiny companies.
And especially small with more of a value tilt as well.
Right. So long term, those have been the winners. But lately, like I said, the big boys, like the biggest of the big have killed it. And so like if I had to make prediction, I think that that's going to swing a different direction where maybe it's, you know, smaller. It could be small tech companies. It could be small or just generally smaller companies, or it could be a swing more towards international or emerging markets. Like that's another thing, like emerging markets, yeah, international have not been doing so well the past 10 to 15 years. And
yeah, you actually read my mind on what my next question for you was going to be, was if you felt that same way about going from US to international as you did from maybe large to small.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I have no idea, but
there's gotta be some mean reversion at some point.
There's, you know, if things work out how they have in the past, there would be some eventual reversion to the averages. And that would indicate that it's, you know, going to flip flop. And that kind of lines up too with like changing political environment, you know, regulatory changes. And like, it's been kind of friendly for like giant companies, and, you know, maybe it gets a little more friendly for small companies, and I don't know. But at the end of the day, like that's kind of going back to the investment concerns, is ideally the way that you invest is that you own all the different things and you've kind of built in the flexibility so that when, you know, like we didn't own all giant tech companies, you know, even though we saw them doing really well.
We may own pieces of all of them within a diversified vehicle.
Right. We owned pieces of them, but we didn't go all in on the giant tech companies. We maintained like proper diversification and different asset classes. And so that, because, you know, different cycles will happen and then other areas will do better in the future.
Yeah. Absolutely. I've become very partial because, as you know, Daniel, I'm a big investment nerd. So I'm always full of various charts and graphs and discussion points on that when clients have questions or when those concerns come up. So I've become very partial to walking them through the Callen chart every once in a while when we talk about those sorts of things. Like, big tech has been doing so well for, you know, these many years. But if we look back on like a 20-year chart.
Is that the periodic table?
Yeah. I often bring that up with people and share my screen, and we just kind of walk through it together and just show that's why we believe in diversification, because that what has done well in the past decade or in the past 5 years, 3 years, 1 year, does not mean that that will persist indefinitely. And we want to be prepared for those rotations, those changes to the economy, those changes to anything that could impact those investment returns, and just kind of walk through what that looks like over time to help visualize that.
Maybe we should do a show where we walk through the periodic table. If you're listening and you're not familiar with it, Google the periodic table or the Callen chart, Callen chart. And it's a really cool visual of like historical returns in various different asset classes. And let us know if you want us to cover in a future show. We can definitely, that would be fun for us, especially Jackie. I know Jackie
especially
would love
me. Daniel probably wouldn't enjoy it nearly as much as
I mean, I, you know, it's pretty visual. I like the visual part of it. It's pretty to look at. But as we wrap up, I was going to ask you if you had any predictions on your end. I'm not going to make you make predictions, but any come to mind or any things we didn't cover that you had in mind?
Things we didn't cover. I feel like we pretty much tackled all of the big ones other than here's my prediction. I'm sure there are things that we didn't cover because we don't even know that they are on the radar yet to be potential tax or investment changes. So I'm sure that there are others out there that we haven't discussed today that we will be discussing in the next couple of years. And I think going back to what we said earlier, you know, here's another prediction, so to speak, is the only thing that we can be certain of is that there will be uncertainty. So that this is going to be a developing situation. It's going to be something that we're keeping an eye on for everyone and trying to stay abreast of any of these changes so that we can discuss and have a plan.
Yep. Awesome. All right. Well, I'm glad we finally we're able to get you on, and we'll look forward to doing it more in the future. Maybe we can do the Callen table next time. That'd be
sure. There'll be big demand for it.
Yeah, we'll see. Let us know if you want us to cover it. All right, Jackie. Thank you.
Thank you. See ya.
No guests or clients appearing on the podcast received any form of compensation for their appearance and obtained no other benefit from us. It should not be assumed that every client has had the same experience.